أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله الذي لا يبلغ مدحته القائلون ولا يحصي نعماءه العادون ولا يؤدي حقه المجتحدون الذي لا يدركه بعض الحمم ولا يناله غوص الفطن. ثم الصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين حبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم وآل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين صاحب العصر والزمان خليفة الرحمن إمام الإنس والجان ولعن الله أعداهم أجمعين إلى يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله وقوله الحق. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. أَفَمَنْ كَانَ مَيْتًا فَأَحْيَيْنَاهُ وَجَعَلْنَا لَهُ نُورًا يَمْشِي بِهِ فِي النَّاسِ صدق الله العلي العظيم. اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد وعجل فرجهم. The illuminated heart being a source of light for the darkness of others has been our ongoing topic, and tonight is our fifth discussion on this topic. We again send our condolences on tonight being the Shab-e Shahadat of Sayyidah Fatima Zahra Salamu Allah Alayha, a very difficult night for the believers. Our heart goes out to the Imam of our time, who no doubt is remembering his grandmother and grieving along with us. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala accept our tears, accept our grief, and give us no grief in this world except for the grief and the gham of Ali Muhammad. Our discussion now for the past few nights has been revolving around the premise that we need to show a little bit more empathy inside of our communities, inside of ourselves as well. And this is, of course, in light of the fact that we are, you know, paying tribute tonight and tomorrow being the day of her Shahadat to this great woman who lived a life of selflessness, serving the cause of her father, defending the honor of her husband, guiding her children towards righteousness. All of these actions of hers screamed her selflessness. And in this pandemic era, in this era where we are, you know, we become isolated now, we've become quarantined, things are not functioning the way that they should. Our centers are closed. Things are all online. There are many people who don't handle these things very well. And my request to myself and then to all of you is take a moment and reach out to those around you, be it your extended family, be it your uncles and your aunts, your cousins, be it the members of the community that you know, especially the elders, and especially those that you know have mental health issues or a history of mental health issues. People you know that would rely heavily on the community and the center to bring them some sort of, you know, purpose and some sort of validation. These I find to be the vulnerable ones nowadays. And really, what good is a community, what good is a family, if in these days now, you know, we're not able to be there for each other? And so we've talked about everything from, you know, why is it that sometimes we hesitate to be there for each other? Why is it that we can't find that motivation? That is that culture even there for me to pick up a phone and call a person for 5 minutes and say, look, I was thinking about you, hope you're okay? Or even get more detail. I heard things aren't well right now inside of your home. Anything we can do to help? And yes, you know, I mentioned it a little bit that, you know, the person might be ready to make that phone call, but on the other side, there are people who are not ready to receive that phone call. And it goes both ways. There are many people who stop and hesitate in reaching out to others because they simply don't know what their reaction might be. Maybe I'm overstepping, Milana. Maybe I'm not as close as I think I am to them. Maybe I should just kind of mind my own business. they really want one more reminder from some random stranger about how difficult their life is? Because, you know, as I mentioned to all of you a couple of nights ago, that sometimes, you know, it takes one to two bad experiences for us to say, you know what, never again. It's like that company that's run by a Shia, and he hires, mashallah, only members of the community, and once or twice or three times he's been burned by his own community, so he swears blind, I'll never hire in my community again. Right? I don't blame them sometimes, but sometimes it's like, look, that was one or two cases. It doesn't mean that everyone will be like that, right? And that's where I talked about the God-based morality process. Now, last night we spoke about mental health. And there is a direct connection between empathy and solving our own mental health issues. I think sometimes we underestimate the power that rescuing others has on rescuing ourselves. And one point I want to make tonight, you know, like we're slowly wrapping up our lecture series now. Tonight and tomorrow, of course, are our last two lectures. I want to make sure that, you know, we leave behind practical steps. The first thing I'm going to say to all of you and to myself is that, you know, when you're there for somebody, let's try to, you know, push the listening agenda and not the advice agenda. Okay? There are some of you, myself, some of us, myself included, that, you know, we give individuals unsolicited advice. They never ask for it. They don't want it. You know, you really should be doing this, and if I were you, I'd do this, and no, you should do... Who asked you? Did I ask you for your advice? Are you an expert in this field right now? Right? What's better at that moment than giving advice is to listen to the person that you're there to help. Remember, like I said, I've been saying it time and time again over the past few nights. I'm not asking anyone to swoop in and save the day. Sometimes we don't know what the solution is. There are people who call me with very detailed and very deep-rooted problems, and I'm not a professional in certain areas, and I'm not going to pretend like, oh, yeah, I mean, that's the easiest. No, wait a second now. I don't know. What I can do is maybe provide some advice from the Quran, but if this requires, you know, a professional, please, by all means, visit the professional. We can't be an expert on everything. And some of us like to come and say, oh, I know exactly what you need to do. You know, divorce him, do this, or tell your kids to no. Ooh, wait a second. Maybe that's not what they want. They don't want, you know, like you don't even know my situation. You barely know me. And you're coming in with, mashallah, this advice that apparently is like, you know, foolproof. It's not what they want sometimes. Walk in with a listen first attitude. I've said this before. There are people who call me with a lot of problems. And all I do is I quiet, I listen, I who, let them know that I'm listening. I am listening. I'm not being insincere about it, but I'm not interjecting. I'm not cutting them off. I don't pretend like I know what's going on inside their internal world. I don't pretend like I have all the answers. Because half of the answer sometimes is them listening to themselves talk about the issue. And in that, sometimes, a lot of cases, they find their own solution. You know what, man? It's okay. I know exactly what to do. Thank you so much for being there. And meanwhile, I didn't do anything. I legit didn't do anything. I just picked the phone up. Okay, inshallah. Yeah, we'll pray for you. Absolutely. I'm okay. So we need to be, if we want to be empathetic towards others, we need to be better listeners. It's a whole topic by itself. The Holy Prophet has a very interesting encounter with a man. This encounter is reported by our fifth Imam, Imam Muhammad Baqir, alayhi salatu wasalam, Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahu. The fifth Imam says that this man approaches the Holy Prophet, says, Ya Rasulullah, ma'al ilm. What is knowledge? What's ilm? And the Prophet thinks and he says that the first thing knowledge is insult. Okay? The first thing that knowledge is silence. It's a very powerful hadith. First thing knowledge is silence. He says, what else is knowledge? Then he says, istima, listening very carefully. Remember, I talked about sama'a, istima'a in a couple of nights ago when I talked about that surah, Hajj verse. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ تَدْعُونَ مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ. Remember that verse, individualism. That was two nights ago. That istama here does not mean just listen. No, listen very attentively. So the first stage of the ilm, he says, is silence. Then it is listen carefully. ثُمَّ مَا, he says, then what? Then he says, عَلَى حِفْظٍ, retain what you've heard. Look at the steps now. Beautiful hadith, powerful hadith. Retain what you've heard. ثُمَّ مَا, the man keeps going, what else, Ya Rasulullah? He says, قَالُوا عَمَلٌ بِهِ. What you've retained now, act on it. Act on it. Then finally he says, ثُمَّ مَا, what else? Then he says, نَشَّرَ, the Prophet says. Then spread what you are already practicing. Look at the stages now and examine where we think we have knowledge about a certain topic or a certain situation or a certain purpose, a person. He says what? Silence. Then listening very carefully. Then retaining. Then practicing on what we retained. And then what? And then spreading that. People like me, we spread first and then we go back and say, oh, wait a second, maybe I should have heard that part. Ooh. A very beautiful hadith. If we want, and this is not just for anyone. Sometimes, you know, I'm talking about others. I think, you know, sometimes maybe people might think that I'm talking about people outside the family. Sometimes I think that the person beside you is someone who you need to be there for. Our own spouses sometimes. Our own children, our own parents, our own siblings. To the best of our ability, right? If the person has closed the door, I said, look, I don't want to not respond to a one-word answers or whatever the case, then you've done your part. You're not going to grovel and beg anybody, you know. Okay, look, you know that I'm here. I've made it very clear to you that I am concerned about you. I have sent you messages. You don't want to respond? Fine. I've left the door a crack open. Now it's up to you to open the door full. I've done my part. The people who ask me, Lana, I tried. Every day I message. Nothing. Stop messaging. Stop. That's one point I also want to make. I'm everywhere tonight, I know. But there's also one point I want to make is that a lot of us reach out, nothing from their end. You've done your part now. You've made it very clear that you are concerned about them, that you are remembering them. That's enough. Khalas, now wait now. When they're ready, if they're ready. If they're not, that's fine. I've done my part. Remember, God sees what you did. They may not respond. They may ghost you. They may not even respond to your messages. But God knows what you do and rely on that vision of God. Not to kind of deviate from my topic here, but a lot of the issues that I find in marriages nowadays that are happening and those troubled marriages is a lack of listening. We're just not good listeners. And specifically, I hate to pick on us, but the men, as men, we're just not good listeners. Look at this level he's talking about, the Prophet. First, silence. It's a person who's talking in front of you, talking to you. Quiet. And what's meant by silence is put everything away. Focus on what they're saying. Not that you're watching the match and she's talking to you. You're on your phone, she's talking to you. You know, you seem like you want to be anywhere else but there at that moment and she's talking to you. Like, what are you sending? What kind of message are you sending her physically with your own body language? Or right now you're talking, but nothing really is, you know, entering my mind right now. We want to give undivided attention. Same idea. When we go to someone, when we reach out to somebody, when we call somebody, and they actually begin to let us into their internal world, don't come there with, if I were you, I would. If they ask you, what do you think, what's your opinion? Again, try to be very neutral. Try to be a little bit balanced, this and that. But don't walk in thinking, oh, I know exactly what she needs to do. No, you don't. You don't. There are some things that we have to dig out by ourselves. All we need is someone to come and give me the shovel, tell me where to dig. Everything else, I'll do myself. Do not give people unsolicited advice. Number one, it's going to come back to haunt you. Number two, it's annoying after a while. You come across as somebody who thinks they know everything, especially if you yourself are not, you know, stable in your life. Dude, you're telling me this. Have you applied your own advice? After all, you lose credibility in the eyes of others. What they need at that moment not a long list of a to-do list. What they need right now is just a simple, non-judgmental set of ears. Don't judge me. Don't question. Don't sit there and say, how could? No, I don't need that right now. I need you to sit there and just listen to me. Sometimes, you know, our spouses just sit there and need us to listen to them. They will feel instantly better. Especially if they don't have another outlet. Right? Listening is a very, very key point in communication and also in empathy as well. If we want to be that selfless individual, you know, say the Fatima came, she would welcome the Prophet home and she would sit there and she would listen to his gila and shikayat and complaint. Imam Ali would come home, complain about the people of Kufa, and say the Fatima would listen to what Mawla Ali would say to her. We have to be better listeners if we want to be those individuals that empathize with others. And I think a lot of you do. A lot of you have to listen to me right now. You know, I want to help them, Mawla. I don't know where to start. Like I said, message them initially. How's it going, this and that? You got a good response? Can I call you? Sure, calling you. Okay. Listen to what they're saying. Let them get it all out. Don't interject. Don't interrupt. Don't pretend like don't finish your sentences. No, nothing. Absolutely not. Because sometimes I tell you half of the issues that they're going through is partly because nobody listens to what they're saying. Always remember, if you have anybody who is quote unquote under you, meaning you are. They are your dependent, not just financially, in all aspects of it. Okay, so whether you are a teacher for students or a parent for a child or an older sibling for a younger sibling, you play a key role in their development from a very early age. So once in a while, I come across these cases, and now it's becoming more than once in a while, where an individual now has, you know, all of his confidence is shot. He has such self-confidence issues. When it comes to work, he can't hold a stable job, because the moment that he is called into the office and the boss talks to him, he bolts. He can't, for example, finish anything he starts, because the moment that it goes off path, he thinks, you know what, let me preemptively sabotage it so I don't have to go through failure. And, you know, his marriage is a shambles. He's not a good father because, you know, and when you really dig deep into it, he simply is a person who allowed the words he heard growing up in his house to still stick with him. How could you not, right? When your parents are saying things that are rough, when your older sibling is sitting there telling you you're nothing, right? When your teacher has told you that you're a zero, that stuff sticks with you. It resonates. And for generations after, for decades after, it's going to still be there. It will come out in different areas. But it is important that we understand that a lot of what they're going through, the person that you have decided to help pull out of darkness, is somebody who has gone through a very difficult journey. Don't pretend like you know what that feels like. Even if you've gone through your own journey, that's your journey, Baba. It's not his journey, man. So listen. Surah Al-A'raf, verse number 179, beautiful verse, but a very, very scary one. The Quran says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, وَلَقَدْ ذَرَعْنَا لِجَهَنَّمَا كَثِيرًا مِنَ الْجِنِّ وَالْإِنْسِ. From the majority of the jinn and the insan that is in the hellfire, in fact, there is some Mufassirin have quoted this verse, is that these are those people that have these qualities that I'm about to mention, where Allah uses these people as motivation to create the hellfire. Woo! Man, that's a different level. It's one thing where you are hellbound. It's one thing where Allah looks to you and says, because of people like you, I'm creating the hellfire. Whoa! Who are they? لَهُمْ قُلُوبًا لَا يَفْقَهُونَ بِهَا. They have hearts, never allowed anything to penetrate inside of them. Always, everything was always surface level. يَفْقَهُونَ فَقَهَ فِقْ in Arabic means فِهَمِ عَمِيقٍ, a very deep understanding of something. They had hearts that should have what? Should have hosted and housed many, many deep levels of wisdom. Everything was surface level. Any research in the deen, any readings on Islam, the ulama are there. I'll get the khulasa on Thursday night. I'll get the 45-minute lecture synopsis. But let him spend hours. Let her spend hours and hours preparing for one 45-minute lecture. I'll kind of get the gist of it, and that's it. So the deen becomes a deen of gist. It becomes a deen of a khulasa. Right? It becomes, you know, that deen where you pick up a book, think, oh, you know, I'd like to read it. Let me just flip it over and read the quick synopsis. Oh, okay, I get it. And you put it back on the shelf. That's become our deen. Why? لَهُمْ قُلُوبًا لَا يَفْقَهُونَ بِهَا. They had hearts. They never allowed anything to penetrate deep inside that heart. وَلَهُمْ أَعْيُونًا لَا يُبْصِرُونَ بِهَا. They had eyes, but they never used the eyes to wake up the eyes of the soul. Again, the Arabic is very interesting. It's not وَلَهُمْ أَعْيُونًا لَا يُنْذِرُونَ بِهَا. Nadara and basara, two different verbs in Arabic. Nadara could mean one that physically sees with the eyes. Fasidun fil ard, fanzuru kayfa kana aqibatul mukaththibin. Walk the earth, Allah says, look with your eyes at the ultimate destiny of those who have denied Allah. Look, open your eyes, look at them. Look at the athletes and the celebrities and the atheists and those. Where are they now? That's fanzuru. But here in this verse of 179 Surah Al-Af, it's what? La yubsiruna biha. They never allowed basira to enter them. This insight to enter them, meaning they never allowed their eyesight to be converted into insight. Basirat. A very, very important trait that we need today in this delicate time. To be able to distinguish between right and wrong when it is so clouded, it's so gray, it's so blurred, the lines are so blurred sometimes, you have no idea what's going on. You really, truly need somebody, that trait, to pick apart that and say, no man, that's false and this is hak and truth. Not so simple nowadays. What helps with that is basirat insight. Again, not my topic, a huge discussion in Islam. But it's not just the fact that they don't have 20/20 vision. No. Allah has bestowed mankind with eyesight and insight. The eyes of the body and the vision of the soul. Right? We use in Farsi and Urdu, Chishmi Basirat, right? The eyes of insights. Those are your internal kingdom. And then Allah says the third quality is وَلَهُمْ أَذَانٌ لَا يَسْمَعُونَ بِهَا. They had ears. They never listened to anything. Warning after warning after warning. Nothing penetrated. Eyes, heart, and ears. Listening is a very important tool. Because, you know, the verse goes on to say, أُولَيْكَ كَلَعَنَعَامْ بَلَهُمْ أَضَلْ أُولَيْكَ هُمُ الْغَافِلُونَ. These people are just like cattle. They're like cows. Nothing affects them. In fact, balhum adal. In fact, they're worse than that. They're worse than cattle. They're amongst the heedless ones, the ghafil ones, the ones who don't give those things that require and demand our importance. They don't. Warning after warning, hadith after hadith, majlis after majlis, but nothing ever gets to them. I've seen individuals who have sat in a majlis, a 45-minute lecture, glued to the scholar, does not blink, doesn't look at his phone, absorbing everything. The topic the alim is talking about is precisely describing him and his deficiencies. But nothing can actually go in. Because we're too busy now giving nuskhis and prescriptions to everybody else. We don't understand that sometimes the toxic behavior comes from me. The problem is me. The anger is me. I'm the one who's gaslighting people. I'm the one that's being toxic to others. I'm the one that's canceling everybody else. Right? So my point in this verse is how important it is to listen. And those who didn't, they become individuals who are the burning fuel for the hellfire. The first point in tonight's discussion is that if we want to enter now this world of empathy, reach out to people tonight, what do I do? What's the first step? Walk in with a proper mindset. You're not there to save the day. Nobody, no one's asking you to save the day. It's very pompous of someone like me to believe that I'm there to save. I remember my first interview in the Hausa. I had a translator with me, of course, and they make you go through a series of steps. I don't know how it is now, but this is we're talking about several years ago. You know, in 2004, I think this is now a while back. And I was sitting there with a person who was interviewing me to find out, you know, this guy's a proper mindset or not, right? And, you know, he said, you're from Canada. I mean, you know, that's a first world country. You're coming to a village, and home is essentially a village. The water is undrinkable. The weather is extremely hot. The people aren't the best. Well, why? I mean, why? If you want to learn religion, stay at home and just order some books. And what's your purpose? Why are you here? I made the mistake of saying, besides, you know, I want to learn more. Besides the fact, I also want to go back and guide my community. Oh, that's when he just put his pencil down and took his glasses off. And, you know, one of those, like, okay, all right, let's, one of those. I was like, uh-oh, here it comes. He said, who asked you? Did they ask you, can you go to Qom and learn and come back and save us? Do you think that you're going to come in after, what, a couple of years of learning and come in and, okay, guys, I'm here now, let me save you. They're like, who asked you? Like, do I need saving? Or it's very pompous. He said it's very egotistical for people to come from any part of the world, come here to think that, you know what, I'm here to save the world. Who are you to save the world? Who? Have you saved yourself? And have you saved yourself to the point where you have enough saved up for you to go out and save others? I don't know. He really kind of put things in perspective. He wanted to make sure that I didn't start off on the wrong foot. You're not here to save anybody, man. You're here to save yourself. Right? You walk into a situation where you want to show empathy, you want to help somebody, you reach out to them. They're not asking you to come in and save the day. Let's keep that. I mean, very, very egotistical of us to think I have all the answers and I'm going to give them all. No, man. Go in and listen. Just listen. Quietly listen. Give them what I believe for a lot of people they haven't gotten for several years, sometimes their entire life, an individual who's actually invested in what they're saying. The Prophet would turn his physical body towards someone who's talking to him just to let them know, look, physically, I am with you as well. My mind is listening, my heart's listening, my ears, everything about me right now is listening. He would never cut anyone off, would never finish your sentences, wouldn't do any of that. And we all have those things to work on. Sometimes, you know, I've seen that we go for condolences. A person loses his father, and I go for condolences. And I end up talking about my father. I end up breaking down in front of him about my father. He ends up coming and saying, there, it's okay. I said, bye, don't worry, inshallah, you know, may Allah give you patience. But I was here for your condolences. You can't, 20 times. Don't do that. Let's not do that. Let's walk in and say, look, I'm not here to give you, I don't want to give you advice. I'm simply here to share in your darkness, to share with you, to give you things that maybe you've never had. And that is someone who quietly listens to everything you're saying and is invested in what you're saying. I think I made my point. The first point is, listen. The second point that's very, very important, that kind of connects to my point from last night, and that is that sometimes in this pandemic, when it comes to being empathetic, I think sometimes we have to be empathetic with ourselves as well. Oh, man. We have to be able to now listen to ourselves, if that makes any sense whatsoever. Whole discussion now on IQ and EQ, emotional intelligence, and you know, it's a little bit related here, of course. But you know, the funny thing is that if we begin to kind of begin to label our emotions and open up that very scary closet where all our emotions are, that have been there since I was 6 years old and 12 years old and 15 years old and being bullied at school and being told I'm a zero and being rejected here, all that is in a is in a door that's kind of shut tightly and locked, and you are never to open this door again. What if we opened that door and went in and said, okay, let's deal with this, right? It's like a closet. It's like one of those rooms in your house that you don't know where to start. So the best way to start is to not start. Close the door, walk away, and say, look, everything's clean, just don't open that door, right? It's like sometimes when the guests come over and you have 10 minutes to quickly clean up, so you stuff everything in your closet. Say, look, if you're going to show them the bedroom, don't open the closet door, okay? Just don't. Don't want to face what's inside there. We are people who, especially in the South Asian community, who like to shove things under the rug. Then we have this massive hill inside the living room of the rug. We can see there's something underneath the rug. We're like, yeah, we'll walk around it, walk over it, ignore it. It's there, but, you know, won't address the elephant in the room. No, not at all. Until we actually lift up the carpet and take out one piece at a time. When we begin to do that, we become connected with the feelings of others as well. I cannot stress enough. Again, I don't mean to make this into a psychology class, Psych 101. No, I don't. But I am telling you that knowing your emotions, emotional intelligence is very, very clear. Very, very important. Describing the mu'mineen, the Quran talks about those who give. Right? Dharra'i wa sarra'i. Those who give during difficult times, those who give during easy times. Those who give when they have a lot to give, those who give when they don't have much to give. وَكَاذَمِينَ الْغَيْذِ. Another attribute of a believer is that they swallow their anger. They're fully in tune with their emotion. Sometimes, you know, we react to an emotion inside of us that wasn't an emotion to begin with. We snap at a person who thinks, what did I do wrong? You did nothing wrong. She just needs to have a meal. Let her eat something and she'll feel better right away. Okay? He snaps at somebody. That's not anger. It's actually fear. He addresses his fear by snapping. But he needs to address his fear properly. Until and unless we can find the words to express and be okay with now revisiting things and rehashing things and pulling things out of that shut door closet, opening it a little bit at a time, taking one piece at a time and dealing with it. Dealing with the fact that, you know what, I was a forgotten child inside of my home. Dealing with the fact that I was always quieted and silenced inside of my house. Dealing with the fact that my older siblings never respected me. With the fact that I was bullied, let's say. I was overweight as a child, for example. Right, I went through a very difficult divorce, for example. I don't know. I was given to my aunt to raise because my parents thought, you know what, we already have four kids. She doesn't have one. Let me give her my fifth kid. So I was basically given away. I have my confidence issues. I have my body issues. I have my faith issues. I'm not where I want to be when I hit 40. Oh my God, closet, that massive hill inside of our room, right? It's all covered. It's all, you know, and we can choose to step over and say, yeah, I know there's a big bump in my rug. That's okay. Everything else is perfect, right? It's all clean. Just don't go in that door. That's the door that we need sometimes to get to help others in their darkness. Sometimes there is a direct correlation between us empathizing with us and then also with others. Goes back to self-forgiveness, right? Goes back to us being able to tell ourselves, look, part of the growing process is to sit there and say that you were deficient here. You were at fault here. You were wrong here. Shaitan doesn't allow us to grow. He doesn't. He tries to remind us, especially if we try to forget all that we did, reminds us either by, you know, some old person from my past coming up, or, you know, some reminder here and there to let us know, look, you think you've changed? No, you're the exact same person you were when you're 15, 17 years old. The difference is what? Your beard's a little bit whiter. That's it. That's it. When we don't begin to look inwards, we're not able to have that compassion to place ourselves in the shoes of others. I'm not compassionate to myself. Forget others. But yes, sometimes, you know, it is a reversal that it felt good to be compassionate to that person, to empathize, you know, to be able to understand their emotions. Maybe, just maybe, I should start that with myself. Cannot stress enough how important this is. Self-care, self-forgiveness. Sometimes to the point where God's forgiven us. He's shown us all the signs that He's forgiven us. But the one person that has not forgiven us is ourselves. We refuse. We refuse to believe that, you know what, I might be the same person as I was when I was 18, 19 years old. Maybe you're not. Is it all possible? I understand regret and remorse. Remember, regret, remorse, guilt, these are all can be very positive emotions. Telling us that, you know what, being motivated for us not to repeat those things all over again. We have to be able to label our emotions properly. And be able to be those individuals who are able to say, look, I have done this, I've made a mistake, I have moved on from here. You know, inshallah, God has forgiven me. All the signs are there, you know, the signs of growth, of changing my behavior. Those triggers of sin are around me, but I don't sin anymore. The same people that will bring up the shaitan inside of me, I have cut off from my life, for example. The one habit that I had growing up, I kicked it. My now focus, whenever I have free time, is not to binge watch, you know, disgusting shows, but now I use my time for documentaries, or I use my time to better myself, or whatever the case may be. All those are a different and new me, which tells me that, and part of this, ulama of akhlaq say, this is Allah's signs, that look, it's time for a change, and what you're doing is working. That's not the hard part. The hard part is to emulate that when it comes to our own selves. We are so hard on ourselves, so hard on ourselves. I'm not asking you to take things easy. Oh, this and I said, you have no idea. You're right. I don't have any clue what your past or your closet or your skeletons or what you did looks like. All I know is one thing. The biggest sin of all the sins, maybe after shirk, is to convince ourselves that our sin or sins are more powerful than His mercy. At that moment, we've done God wrong. You stay within the realm and the circle and the da'ira of Tawheed. You don't let go of La ilaha illallah. Everything is forgivable. Everything. You have to be able now to bring that forgiveness to the point of your lips, and to the point of reform of the heart. So Shabi Shahadat of Sayyidah Fatima. Two very key points. Number one, the power of listening. When you walk into a situation where you want to empathize, listen first attitude. Don't give them advice unless they're asking you, please tell me, I respect your advice. What do you think I should do? Then maybe you can say, you know what, honestly, like, this is what I would do, but everyone's different. Maybe you want to try this. Fine. Walk in with, I don't know, I know what to do. You don't. Okay, thank you very much. Did you at least ask me, you know, what the problem is? No. Number two is, in order for us to be successful in empathizing with others, we have to begin to empathize with ourselves. When's the last time you celebrated any spiritual victory of yours? When's the last time that you went to bed at 2 a.m.? Your alarm went off for Fajr. Your eyes are burning. You finally fell asleep and you forced yourself out of your warm, warm bed. No one's there to watch you. No one's there to live stream it. No one is there to hashtag it. Nothing. You do it simply because it's an obligation. And you wake yourself up, you break that sleep, and you say, Allahu Akbar for Fajr. That's a spiritual victory. It's okay. It's okay to stop and pat yourself on the back. I promise it's not blasphemous. It's okay that if somebody who's non-mahram is coming towards you, and you want to look at them, but you don't. You put your eyes down until they completely walk away from you. It's okay to say, Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Ooh, that felt good. This is what I mean by empathy with yourself. Okay. This is what I mean sometimes that, you have to be compassionate to yourself. Right? We go through various seasons of life, guys. And those seasons bring out a whole array of emotions and stress. And we react differently to every emotion. It could be that maybe during that season, the emotion was raw. It was hard. It was tough. And my reaction to those emotions was not right. But that was for that season. We're now in a different season. It's okay to say that was a different season. I've learned from that season. Then maybe we are successful in being a source of empathy for others. She understood the importance of the wilayat of Amir al-Mu'mineen because she understood Ghadir, Sayyidah Fatima. She understood that this was a command from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. اليوم أكملت لكم دينكم وأتممت عليكم نعمتي يا أيها الرسول بلغ ما أنزل إليك من ربك. Ghadir was an important event, and she understood this was from Allah's command, and she was so in tune with Allah, they said that she would stand there for prayer for so long, her feet would swell. That she would look at someone like Fivva as her kaniz, not as her maid or servant, snapping fingers, yelling out commands. No, Fivva, one day you work, one day I work. Blisters on her hands from cooking for her family. She had Fizza. Why does she have blisters on her hands? Equality, justice. You've brought someone into your home. They're a human being as well. When Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein alayhim as-salam realized that their mother was no longer in this world, the first thing they did was they ran to the masjid. When Imam Ali saw his two sons, you're young kids, you just lost your mother, you can't hide it from anybody. The moment someone asks you what's wrong, the waterfall starts, the tears start. Imam Ali didn't say a word. He could tell by the look on their face that his wife was no longer in this world. They say that Imam Ali collapsed out of grief on that very spot, stood up and walked back towards the home, entered the house now, saw Fatima lying there. Remembered her wasiyat, that Ali, I want you to wash my body. Ali, I want you to wrap my body. Ali, I want you to carry out the janazah and mayat in the middle of the night. Ali, I don't want certain people there in my mayat. Tragedy. Imam Ali now is giving ghusl to his wife. That alone is the mazlumiyat of Amid al-Mu'mineen. Somebody at Hujjat passes away, the husband or the spouse of that individual calls, let's say, the burial team and says that, you know, my wife has just passed away. The first thing that they do is they make arrangements for what? For the burial. They get a ghusl team going, they get the kafan ready, they get the grave dug up, they call, they announce to the community, everything is done quickly. The one person who is oblivious to all this is the husband. In fact, they say, look, we will handle everything. You don't need to do anything. Don't be there in the ghusl khana. Don't have to worry about anything else. We'll arrange for the alim for salat al-mayyat. We'll get talqeen read. We'll get her buried ASAP. You just be there with the kids. You be there with the family. You be there to grieve for yourself. But there wasn't one person that my mullah could sit there and count on to say, Mola, we'll do everything. You just sit aside. There was nobody. The tanhai of Amir al-Mu'mineen is his mazlumiyat, washing the very body of that wife that gave up everything for his wilayat. They begin to now give ghusl. Some reports say that Asma bint Umais is on one side, Ali is on the other, outside the ghusl khana. Imam Ali could hear the children crying. Asma, go outside and please quiet the children down. I don't want the neighbors to complain. It's at that moment that Asma leaves the ghusl khana from inside that very same ghusl room. You could hear the shriek of a man now, this loud cry. Salman al-Farsi later on when asked Amir al-Mu'mineen that Ali, Mawla, if anyone was ever to ask me who was the bravest, the courageous, the Hadar al-Karrar, the Fatah al-Khaybar, all of these laqabs and titles that we have so much love and admiration for Amir al-Mu'mineen, I would say it was you, Mawla. It was you, Mawla. It was you, Mawla. But that shriek that you let out in the ghusl khana, I don't understand that shriek. Ali looks at Salman, tears rolling down his face. Hey Salman, what do I tell you? I didn't realize the extent of my Fatima's injuries when I was giving her ghusl and my hand now wiped away and rubbed over her ribs. I realized at that moment that her ribs were completely broken, and I let out a cry to say, why, Fatima? Amir al-Mu'mineen, I would say this to you. You were there giving ghusl to your wife Fatima. Her ribs are broken, but come to the day of Ashura, your Hussein Asri Ashur. Now Umar ibn Sa'd says, I need 10 volunteers to grab the hooves of their horses. Change the hooves. 5 horses on one side of Hussein, 5 on the other of Hussein. On my command now, the 5 to the right will go to the left. The 5 from the left will go to the right. The last mal'oon to ride over the body of Hussein says that by Allah, when my horse now reached the body of Hussein, I could hear the breaking of his ribs.